When she was gone, he turned to face me.
This is a serious situation, McGill.
I said. Which one, sir?
You're practically standing on the remains of both a NERB and your superior officer. I really thought you'd changed, you know. This mission felt different. You seemed mature, and you functioned as a leader ought to.
While he spoke, Graves took out a laser pistol, checked the charge, and slammed the breech closed again. Hold on, Primus, I said. You've got this all wrong.
I don't think that's possible. I've caught you with a dead NERB, evidence of a dead superior officer, and hell, a dead ship all around you.
Right, right, you've got a point there, but Winslade killed the NERB, not me. He hesitated.
Why?
Why'd he do it? Because he's a greedy snake, sir. He planned to trade away the tech these rogues came up with to advance his own designs. Claver is here to make his own secret deals.
Why?
Graves asked me.
Why should I believe anything you say at this point?
I threw my hands wide. Graves flinched in response, but he didn't shoot me. Not yet.
Okay, I said. Let's try applying some logic here. Why would I come up here in a teleport suit? How did I get one? It makes sense that Claver or Winslade gave it to you,
Graves admitted.
But that doesn't...
No, no, it doesn't mean I'm innocent. But come on now. What's in it for me?
You had a girlfriend on the planet. You're real sweet on her. You warned them about the NERBs, and they're attacking because of that.
Actually, Winslade warned them.
How?
I quickly showed him the recording, and I showed him the timer it had been associated with. The trigger had never gone off, but instead, someone had sent it early.
That was Winslade,
I said, choosing to make him my scapegoat. To be honest, I chose Winslade because I had physical evidence he had been on the bridge. There was no particular reason to hate Winslade over Claver. They were both bastards of the First Order. Graves said.
I don't understand all this, and I'm not sure I need to. All I need to do is kill you and call it even.
That won't satisfy the NERB, sir, I pointed out. His gun and his face sagged a little.
No. No, it won't.
May I make a suggestion, Primus? I asked. He looked at me.
I know I'm going to regret this, but sure, let's hear it, McGill.
I dared to smile. It was a small thing, but it was undeniably there. I could feel it curving on my face. When I was done presenting my idea, I might have thought Graves looked a touch sick. But that couldn't be. He was too tough-minded of an officer to turn green over a little bit of adventure. Chapter 44. We contacted the NERBs. And for once in his long, long life, Graves let me do the talking.
What is this intrusion on our harmony? Droned a translation device.
The NERB that had spoke pulsed toward the screen, filling it entirely. Suddenly, he slopped back and away, quivering with agitation in contrast to the bland words I was listening to. I couldn't help it. I thought of a jello mold at supper when the table leg gets kicked.
I said. This is the starship Nostrum. We're an Earth vessel charged with local enforcement of galactic...
We know who you are, Earthman,
the NERB said.
Why have you set your lapdogs on us? They can't reach us with their missiles. We've moved out of range. Your unprovoked attack has been accounted and added to the growing list of...
You're right about all that, sir, I said, except for one thing. We're not in control of the planet below our two ships. We're here, in fact, to exterminate these people.
The NERB stared at me for a second, then turned and barked at someone off camera.
Your claims are unverified and do not match observable data, he said.
They certainly do, I replied. We've been battling these rogues for days, weeks even. Surely you must have documented that.
It seems that you have assigned a derogatory label to the illegally operating technologists, either in a weak attempt to mislead us from your association, or perhaps from sheer arrogance on your part. And yes, There was a plainly visible conflict on the world below, that's true. But we have no intention of taking up sides. We've been busy cataloging numerous...
I'm sure you haven't missed a trick, sir, I said. The point I'm trying to make is that if the missiles came from the planet below, they have nothing to do with Earth. We've been hit by similar attacks over recent days.
Are you claiming this world isn't under your control, that you're therefore not responsible for the actions of its inhabitants?
That's exactly right, sir. They refuse to evacuate. They refuse to stand down. Now that we've failed in our mission to negotiate our way out of this rebellion, we're asking you to put it down.
How so?
Use your hell burners.
The seal-like being appeared to ponder my suggestion. You want us to destroy this world?
We certainly do. We insist upon it, in fact.
This isn't a warship, the Nairb complained in monotone. We have only basic weapons.
You've got bombs, don't you? I demanded. Use them!
The Nairb looked upset. We can't get that close. They fired missiles at us, and our analysis indicates they're dangerous enough to keep our ship out of bombing range.
I see, I said, nodding my head. You're chicken.
Your colloquialism is unclear through my translator. I am no variety of poultry animal.
Cowards, shirkers of duty, you're unreliable.
This last insult finally seemed to sting the Nairb. Your offensive language is counterproductive, he said. Nevertheless, it appears we have the same immediate goal.
Good. Now let's get down to...
Just a moment, the Nairb said, interrupting. We have orders for you to carry out before our cooperation can begin. You must first provide a clear explanation concerning the fate of our field agent. The screen changed, and the Nairb I'd beaten to death appeared. The vid was clearly streamed and stored from the point of view of their agent. He was looking around, and apparently his recording systems followed his senses. Suddenly, a flurry of violent motion saw the Nairb knocked to the floor and savagely beaten by a tall figure. We couldn't make out the face in the dark. Graves sighed, and his chin touched his chest in defeat.
I recognize that vicious creature, I said loudly. It's a thing called a Winslade.
What is this Winslade you speak of?
A treacherous beast, I said. An evil monster beyond calculation. Fortunately, he's dead. I killed him myself.
That's unacceptable, the Nairb snapped. We must have an accounting. We must mete out our own specialized punishments.
I said, thinking fast. Well, we could revive him and turn him over, along with physical evidence that he was right here at the scene of the crime.
That would be most satisfactory.
There's a problem, however, I said. Our revival machines have been switched off. In fact, most of our combat gear is inoperable. One of the reasons we had to retreat from the world below in defeat is because our guns no longer worked.
My statement seemed to cause some kind of fervor on their side of the channel. I saw the Nairb I'd been talking to, speaking in alarmed tones in its native tongue to others out of sight. But then, a truly shocking event transpired. The Nairb was collared and electrocuted. At least that's what it looked like. It had to be Claver. Could he have gotten down to the planet, procured deadly tech, then teleported it up to the Nairb ship to sabotage them so quickly? If so, it was an impressive feat by any measure. But then, things became more clear. All throughout my conversation with the Nairb, I'd gotten the feeling it was listening to someone else off camera. This being now made itself visible by gliding forward into range of the pickup.
Greetings, Earther.
The translator spoke the alien's words. His glossy body, about the mass of a large man, was levered by 6 spidery legs to settle onto the ground. 2 limbs swung before him, and the long, weird fingers steepled in a gesture of pretentious superiority. I recognized it right off as a Magua. A familiar feeling hit me, like when you know not to put your hand into a dark place because a nasty critter is going to bite you.
The Magua were scary creatures. They might not be impressive to look at, but they were powerful. They were actual galactics, individuals from a superior race who lived at the core of the galaxy on sophisticated planets of which we could only dream. It didn't entirely surprise me that there was a Magua representative aboard the Nab ship. They were the Nab's masters, after all, and this was a critical mission. A scout ship couldn't be left entirely to underlings. "Ha," I said. "Pleased to meet you, Mr. Magua. What happened to the fellow I was talking to?" A flurry of ratcheting clicks funneled through the translating device.
"He was substandard in performance," the Magua said. "He has been removed from my service."
"I see," I said. "In that case, what can we do for you, sir?"
"What is your name, slave?"
the Magua asked. "I'm Centurion James McGill."
"Are you in charge of this local militia?"
"Yep." Graves looked startled. He almost spoke up, but I gave him a tiny shake of the head. He deflated a little. We both knew I was the better liar. Our survival depended on my skills of deception at the moment. "Who do I have the honor of addressing, sir?" I asked the Magua.
"I am the Magnate Slur."
"Great to meet you, Magnate."
"A polite slave, at least,"
Magnate Slur said.
"As a reward, I will treat you with undeserved kindness and explain my behavior. I executed the Nab captain because it was his decision to turn off all your galactic technology. That was a foolish mistake. Your pathetic ground forces were clearly in the thick of battle, attempting to expunge a rebellious force. After listening to your discussion with the Nab, I found I couldn't contain my rage any longer."
I squinted at him. "What exactly got you so fired up, if you don't mind my asking?"
"Isn't it obvious? These rebels fired missiles at my ship. If we'd been a million kilometers closer, they would have killed everyone aboard. That would have included my eminent self. Such idiocy on the part of a Nerb. He was so sure you were performing some kind of violation of galactic law that he risked my person to prove it."
"Ah," I said, catching on. "A natural response, Magnate. I completely understand." Every Magua valued his own comfort and safety above the extinction of any dozen races in a frontier province, perhaps even more than that.
"So,"
Slur continued,
"I will now provide you with new orders. These orders will supersede anything you've been instructed to do by Earth. Is that clear?"
"Crystal clear, Magnate."
"Good. First, we will restore the function of all your equipment so that you may defend yourselves. Then you will revive and arrest the creature you referred to as a Windslade and extradite this beast into our custody."
"So far, so good," I said happily.
"Lastly, before Battlefleet 921 arrives at this dark, greasy hole, you will kill every living thing on the planet below us."
"Hmm," I said thoughtfully. After hesitating for a second, I got an idea and I brightened. "Okay, we'll do it."
"There is no need for you to agree with my commands, creature,"
Magnate Slur said sternly.
"It implies you have the option of disobedience. My word is the word of your master. What is required of you now is action, not agreement or even acknowledgement."
I almost blew it then and said, "Yes, sir," but I caught myself in time. Instead, I stood there and stared like a statue until he dismissed me and cut the channel feed. When the Magua's ugly face finally faded away, I threw up my arms and let loose with a whoop of joy. Graves twisted his lips in disgust.
"That was gut-wrenching to watch, McGill."
"What? We just got so lucky," I told him. "You don't even know the half of it, sir."
"Enlighten me."
"Didn't you hear? They turned all our weapons back on. We can revive our troops and we can get the Legion moving again.
So what?
He demanded.
We had all those resources before, remember? We fought the rogues with everything we had. They beat us, McGill.
Huh? No, 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 I said. You aren't getting my point at all, Graves. We're not gonna kill the rogues. We're gonna kill that hoity-toity Magua. It's the only way.
Graves stared at me after that, and his mouth sagged open a little. I felt proud at that fine moment. I couldn't recall ever having stunned him into silence before.
Chapter 45 Graves started off by reviving Tribune Deitch. I thought that was a mistake, but since I wasn't really in charge of the Legion, what I thought didn't matter much.
We have to get our command and control working again, Graves said. McGill, you promised to deliver Winslay to the Magua. I can't proceed until I hear from an officer who outranks both Winslay and I.
We could revive him and ship him off, then just print a new Winslay, I suggested. We don't even have to tell the second one there was a first one, for that matter.
Graves looked annoyed with my idea.
We're reviving Deitch first,
he said firmly.
She can decide what she wants to do.
In the meantime, I left Gold Deck and became reacquainted with my unit. Leeson was the first man of rank I ran into. He didn't look too happy to see me.
Centurion, Leeson said, giving me a slight nod. What kind of fresh hell are we stuck in now?
What are you suggesting, adjunct?
Well, you disappeared. You didn't come up here on a lifter, and neither did Winslade. I can only surmise, sir, that there was some serious hanky-panky involved.
That's out of line, adjunct, I reprimanded him.
I'm going to ignore your rude remarks, and I won't hold them against you, but let's not hear any more of that kind of talk.
Harris had come up during this exchange, and he crossed his arms and rolled his eyes when he heard my false outrage. He didn't say anything, however. They were both right, of course. I'd been involved in all sorts of conduct unbecoming an officer today, and it wasn't even dinner time yet. But a man certainly couldn't run a unit with his subordinates giving him a hard time in public. After handing out a slew of orders, I sent them off to clean up the dead all over the ship. Despite this gruesome duty, the troops were glad to be back aboard Nostrum. The planet below us had been anything but hospitable.
Sir, asked Harris a few hours later, can I have a word?
I was stretched out on my bunk at the time, and I'd just been starting to dream. The lights in my quarters were automatic, and they didn't turn off until the entire cube went into night mode. Consequently, I'd had my arm thrown over my face.
What is it, adjunct?
I asked wearily. Flesh-printing wands had been run over my various injuries, but I was still sore and worn out. One bad thing about command was how little sleep a man seemed to get.
It's about my murder, Harris said. Have they revived the recruit yet?
Sarah?
Yeah.
I took my arm off my face and looked at him. I thought we'd settled all that, I told him. She had a bad day and a bad revive. Let's not get...
I'm pressing charges, Centurion,
Harris said determinedly.
I just wanted to let you know, as I'm required to inform my immediate superior.
Oh, now, Harris. But he was gone. I shook my head and sighed. My arm slipped back over my face, and I dozed for a few precious minutes. It occurred to me that being in command was quite possibly more of a pain in the butt than it was worth. At least when I'd been lower ranked, I hadn't had to babysit everyone who got into testy arguing about who killed who. When I woke up, it was night. My tapper was buzzing, and I got the feeling it had been doing so for quite some time. I groaned and sat up, pecking at my arm with bleary eyes and clumsy fingers. Tribune Deitch herself showed her face to me. She didn't look happy.
Centurion, she said, I'm awake and back in command of this Legion. Graves has briefed me on a number of gross errors that had been made while I was on ice. Your name has been mentioned prominently, and I wish to talk to you.
All right, sir, I said. But can it wait until morning? I've had quite a day as well. I'm not interested in sleeping, Centurion, she told me sternly. I've been doing it for days, and I'm ready to get things done.
Yes, sir, I said. I signed off, climbed out of my bunk, and into the shower. A few minutes later, I was back on Gold Deck. Deech looked different, I'll give her that. It must have been a while since she'd died and been revived. Her nose was smaller and straighter, along with the countless other improvements that come with being younger. I dare to say her bust line was riding a little higher in the water, too. I could only surmise that she hadn't died for at least 10 years. You look great, Tribune, I said. She sneered at me.
Is that all you have to say? She demanded. They told me you were a shallow man, a rutting beast of the field who thought of women as nothing but targets. Is that true, McGill?
I was taken aback. I said, holding the sound longer than usual due to my natural surprise. Is there something wrong with noticing a woman's attractive appearance, sir?
I'm your superior. You will address me with respect.
Of course, Tribune, I said, stepping closer to her desk. She hadn't told me to sit down or anything, but I was getting annoyed already with her snotty attitude. I figured she was just cranky about having died. People tended to be like that when they weren't used to the process. I plopped my butt down in the chair in front of her desk, and I leaned back a little. I didn't put my hands behind my head or anything, and I didn't cross my legs, because I don't usually do that. But I made myself at home and looked fully relaxed. She frowned at me.
It has been explained to me that you performed a variety of unsanctioned actions on behalf of the Legion, she said. What do you have to say in your defense?
Defense? I asked. Am I under investigation or something?
You're on report. You're permanently on report, McGill. I thought I'd give you a chance. I was a fool. The next time my subordinates warn me about a troublemaker, I'll listen and take harsh action from the start.
Permission to speak freely, Tribune? I asked.
Granted, but don't abuse it.
I leaned forward.
Sir, I said, you've got the wrong idea here. I didn't cause all these problems. I reacted to them. Someone else brought the Legion out here. Someone else parked this ship close enough to get us X-rayed to death, and someone else left you dead for a week.
Deech glared at me. She clearly didn't like me, and I didn't think she was enjoying my little speech either.
Insolence, insubordination, risk-taking above and beyond, she said, combined with a weak respect for women. Shall I go on?
Only if you desire to, Tribune.
McGill, do you know what unexpected action I'm considering right now?
She asked me. Nope.
I'm thinking of sending you to the Magua. They don't know what Winslaid looks like, since
I know, I said. They can barely tell one human from another.
But why would you send me, sir?
Deech had my complete and undivided attention at last. She began ticking off my crimes on her fingertips. I hate when people do that.
Because you killed that Nairb agent, not Winslaid, she began. Then you teleported up here to this ship without authorization. Lastly, you impersonated a commanding officer in a diplomatic crisis as well, namely me.
Hold on, I said. Graves was in command when I represented myself as our Legion commander, as you were dead at the time. Deech waved away my words.
It doesn't matter. The situation is grim. We've been charged to deliver Winslaid to the Nairbs and take out the Tech Smith scientists under the dome. The first order is unfair, and the second order is probably impossible.
It was about then that I realized how Winslaid had gotten ranked up so fast. He'd romanced Deech before she died and straightened out her nose. That had to be it. I'd suspected something of that nature, but now, hearing her talk about how unfair it would be to march him into the lion's den, I felt certain about it. I could have said plenty in my defense at that moment, not the least of which would be accusing her of having an inappropriate relationship that had clouded her judgment on the subject of Winslaid. The irony ran deep in her related accusations toward me concerning improper conduct.
I didn't bother to do any of that, though, mostly because I knew it wouldn't have done any good. Primus Graves and I came up with a great solution to all this, Tribune, I said. I'm surprised he didn't tell you about it. Dietz looked at me suspiciously.
What solution?
Then I told her about my ideas. She looked appalled, then thoughtful. Before I was done, she was white-faced and wincing as my words fell over her mind like gravel hitting a tin roof. By the time I was finally done, she took a deep breath. She picked up an object from her desk, a trophy in the shape of a planet. The inscription read, "For exemplary service on Rigel 7."
"You are different," she said thoughtfully. "You're much more dangerous than I'd been willing to believe."
"Oh, now hold on. Let me finish," she said.
"You see this award? I've earned dozens like it. Do you know why? Because I get things done, and I do them by the book, McGill."
I shrugged. "So I take it my ideas aren't pleasing to your ear?"
"They're like a discordant hammering," she said. "Like the sound of an air car smashing to the ground. Speaking of which, didn't this rivalry between you and Winslade go back to just such an incident some months ago?"
"Oh, that? No, sir. That was just a bump in our shared road. No, we've been hating on each other for at least a decade now."
Dietz nodded slowly and returned the trophy to her desk. She set it down carefully so it aligned perfectly with the others. "I should have known," she said. "Do you know why I'm upset right now?"
I said, unsure of the proper response. I'd gotten a similar, if not identical, question from women on many occasions, and they'd never been happy with any of my answers.
"Because, McGill,"
she went on, relieving me of the stress of having to come up with a response,
"I'm beginning to listen to your insanity. Although I dearly love to send you in Winslade's place, it amounts to deceiving the Nerbs. I just don't see any other way out."
That cheered me up. I'd just begun to give up on her because I'd misread her signs. Instead of becoming sour and stubborn, she was seeing the light. That didn't make her happy, but it did make her smart.
"You won't regret this, Tribune," I told her.
She chuckled.
"I'm very sure that I will regret it," she said. "But I don't know what else to do."
"You see that? That spot you're in now? That's when it's time to call up old James McGill. Drusus, back when he was our leader, he called me into his office to help him come up with something creative like this many times."
"Did he really?"
she asked. "Yes, sir, as God is my witness, he did." She nodded slowly.
"That explains a lot. Dismissed, Centurion."
When I left her, Tribune Dietz was looking long in the face, like someone had just run over 6 of her 7 cats. Conversely, I felt pretty good. We had a plan, and we had a chance. In my book, that meant we were better off than we had been just a few minutes earlier. Things were looking up. Chapter 46. A few hours later, Winslade woke up on a pinnace. I was flying it, and there was a veteran pilot unconscious on the floor. Winslade looked around blearily.
What's going on?
"Don't concern yourself with the details, Primus," I said. "You're being delivered to the Nabs for crimes against the Empire. Just relax, and you'll be processed in short order." His eyes widened, and he looked around in growing alarm.
"You," he said. "You knocked out the pilot. You're giving me to them instead? Why don't I remember any of this?"
"The mind's a funny thing," I told him. "It's liable to play all kinds of tricks on a man when he's fresh from a revive."
"Yes," he said. "I remember now. You killed me. Let me go, McGill. Whatever mad scheme you've hatched, it will never work."
"Come on now, sir," I chided him. "You don't want to end things in a way that leaves you remembered as a coward." He began thrashing around, fighting his bonds and making a racket. I gagged him with tape, and then I took my name patch off my tunic and slapped it onto his. It sank in and adhered to his clothing like it belonged there. He kept straining, looking down at the patch, saying McGill, and straining to rub it off. I could have told him it was hopeless, but he wouldn't have listened. When we docked with the NAB ship, I carried Winslade over my shoulder like a kidnapped victim and marched aboard. A suspicious pack of NAB crewmen met me and escorted me up to their command deck. There I met with my first Magua I had seen in the flesh in years. "This is the prisoner," I said, setting Winslade on the deck.
"How can I be sure?" Magnate Slur asked. "One of you looks much like another."
I shrugged. "That's him," I said. "I'd swear on a stack of Bibles this high."
"Your words are meaningless,"
the Magua complained. It slithered forward to the squirming Winslade and ripped the taped gag from his mouth.
"Identify yourself, creature,"
Slur commanded.
"Magnate," Winslade said breathlessly. "I'm Primus Winslade. That criminal over there is James McGill. He's the one you want."
"You are the Winslade,"
Slur demanded, looming even closer.
"I am indeed."
The Magua shook, and its lobes puffed out of the sides. I honestly thought it was going to kill Winslade right then and there.
"Take this beast away,"
the Slur said at last.
"I'm having trouble controlling my temper in its presence. I don't want to damage it irreparably. Not yet. The death must be drawn out over much time."
Winslade's eyes widened, and he was dragged away. He looked back at me plaintively, and I have to admit I almost felt bad. He got one arm free and grabbed the corner of a hatch, holding up his captors for a second.
"Why do you put that patch on me?"
Winslade demanded, shouting at me.
"Because," I told him, "Galactics can't read English, but you can."
Shock and understanding filled his face. Then he was gone. All the way back to Nostrum, I felt a little low. I knew I had to give up Winslade. He was our scapegoat, and he deserved death 100 times over. But to let a man be tormented to death by aliens, that was beyond the pale. Sure, he'd have done the same to me in a heartbeat, but I was the one who had to live with myself after today. The flight back to Nostrum wasn't a long one, but I came to a decision before it was over. I reached out and switched off the radio. It was only going to start squawking and complaining. I didn't feel like listening to an endless stream of orders telling me to come back to base. I tilted the angle of the vessel and dipped it down into the atmosphere. It was shaped like a tiny version of a lifter, with just enough space aboard for a squad to fit if they squeezed. When I landed just outside the dome, I left the snorting veteran in his vac suit aboard the small ship and walked to the dome walls.
"Floramel," I broadcast with my suit radio. "Are you here? This is James McGill. I've come alone, and I wish to talk."
It took a few minutes, but she finally answered.
"You shouldn't be here,"
she said. "Why not? We're not enemies today. I'm not going to shoot any more of your people."
"We don't have revival machines, James," she said. "The people you killed on your last visit cannot come back. Their families are despondent."
I understood, but I didn't care. I kept tapping on the dome and broadcasting her name until she showed up. A delegation of rogue scientists backed her up as they cautiously opened the dome and let me inside. They encircled me, searched me, and took my weapons.
"Floramel," I said, "I'm sorry about our conflicts, but that's all in the past now. These galactics in the sky, they mean business. We've managed to convince them not to burn Earth, but they are still determined to destroy you and this planet."
"Why don't they come near and do battle?"
she asked.
"Because they're cowards. They'll either wait for us to defeat you,
or they will wait even longer for their battle fleet to arrive and permanently exterminate you from the comfort of space.
And what would you have us do?
She asked. Take me to your deepest tech vaults, to the places where you hide your best secrets. She frowned, creasing her lovely face with lines.
What for? Do you still lust to steal our achievements? If so, we'd rather die with them.
No, I said. But I know someone who does. Florimel needed a little more coaxing, but she finally led me underground. The lab was really located there, inside a dozen subterranean vaults. It was when we reached the deepest, darkest of these chambers that I saw what we were looking for.
Where are the Abercrombers? Demanded an acolyte.
He rushed forward, greatly disturbed. A spot on the floor was dust-free, and it looked like something large and heavy had once sat there.
I don't know what Abercrombers are, I said, but I take it that they're missing.
Yes,
he said, but then another man cried out across the dim-lit room.
Warren, over here, more theft!
There were artifacts missing here and there all over the place. The rogues were outraged. At first they accused me, but I managed to reason with them. If I was stealing all this stuff, do you think I'd fly down here and parade myself in your face? They had no answer, but they were full of despair. What would you like to do to the man who stole your tech gizmos? I asked them. The acolytes and even Florimel quickly listed a surprisingly nasty series of abuses.
Well then, I told them, I'm the man who can help you out. Let's set up a trap for this sneaky bastard who's stealing your goodies.
We worked together, and it took several hours. We left our traps here and there all around the basements of various labs. Every passing minute was filled with fresh anger, as the tech smiths kept finding new items that were missing. A tech trove to fill a king's vault had been stolen. At last, as we were setting the 17th trap, Florimel shrieked. I turned to her in alarm.
What's wrong? We caught something back in Bay 5. How did someone get in there?
Chuckling, I left her behind. Stay here, I said. This rat is dangerous and clever. Let me handle him. Upset but uncertain, they let me go it alone. With vast care, I trotted to Bay 5, threw open the doors, and stared within. There stood Claver, in an odd, off-balance pose. His body had been ensnared in a stasis field. He wasn't entirely motionless, but he was vastly slowed down. I could see his eyes. They blinked once in slow, slow motion. By the time they'd completed the movement, I approached to where the stasis projector hummed, and I placed a hand on it.
Gotcha, rodent, I said, grinning at Claver.
Chapter 47.
Naturally, I was overjoyed to have captured Claver, but I was even happier to gain a teleport suit.
I don't understand,
Florimel said, coming up from behind me and looking at Claver with curious eyes.
How can this man have stolen so many of our artifacts?
He's a dirty one, Claver is, I said. See that suit he has on? It's a teleporting suit.
She stared.
I'm familiar with such technology,
she said.
We've developed it ourselves, but it only works when you have a powered device at each end of a hyperspatial link.
That got my attention. You developed such a thing? Are we talking about projectors, maybe this high?
I gestured with my hands, and she nodded.
I'll be damned, I said. That's what the squids used when they invaded Earth a few years back. They marched millions of heavy troopers onto our planet, and they nearly took us out.
Oh,
Florimel said, looking down at the deck.
We must apologize in that case. We were the primary developers for the cephalopods when they ruled us.
Right, I said. But before Earth opened this lab here in our local space.
No,
she said.
Not exactly. We came here using a gateway such as you describe. The cephalopods gave us to your world
as a form of tribute.
Slaves, huh? I asked. The cephalopod kingdom had an odd culture. They didn't understand concepts such as individual rights, democracy, etc. In their universe, you were either a slave or a master, or both, depending on what company you were keeping at the moment. There was no other social role possible between individuals.
Of course, she said. We served them as we served Earth, until we learned you planned to kill us all.
Let's talk about politics later, I said. What we all want now is to survive the day. To do that, we have to take out that Nairb ship up there.
You can teleport to the ship with that suit, she suggested.
True, but one man will have a hard time annihilating an enemy force so large. We've only got one suit. Unless you can make more. She shook her head.
This is galactic technology. We're good, but they're better. With a million planets worth of resources to draw upon for such an effort, even if we could fabricate such a system, it would take months of research.
Right, new developments won't help. We have to use what we've got now, and quick. A first strike, if you will. During our conversation, Claver seemed to have finally taken notice of us. His eyes had finished a blink, and now they were sliding with infinite slowness toward ours. We probably sounded like buzzing insects to him. Was his head beginning a long turn in our direction? Maybe. It was hard to tell. What about bombs? I asked her. Big bombs. Antimatter, maybe. She shook her head. I wasn't sure if she'd picked up that mannerism from me or she'd always had it. She'd only begun to do it recently.
No, she said. Such devices were removed with the initial group of refugees. We have many curiosities, but few weapons. That's why we made so many fleshed drones to defend our compound.
Right, a few powerful weapons. What about one of these gateways you talked about? She frowned and checked her instruments. Unlike humans, the rogues didn't have built-in tappers on their forearms. They had several devices instead that wound around their bodies on a central wire. It looked kind of creepy, like they had a snake hugging up to them. These harnesses even moved on their own to stay tight, forming to the body's twists and turns.
We have a few gateway units left. An old, simple model. It only links two points in space. You can't reset it to a different destination without dismantling both ends.
My eyes grew big, just as Claver's were beginning to do. My mouth spread into a grin. That will do fine, I said. Let's get it.
What about him?
She asked, pointing at Claver. He's all right for now, as long as his hand doesn't reach up to touch that dial on his chest. If he gets close, cut off a finger or something. Florimel stared at the immobilized thief and again considered appropriate abuses. She then left instructions with a pair of guards to prevent Claver from escaping us. We found the equipment she spoke of deep in the recesses of the dark chambers under the dome. She showed it to me doubtfully. What's wrong? I asked her as I inspected it.
I believe I know what you're planning, and the thoughts disturb me. We never wanted to release savagery upon others. That wasn't our desire. We invented things to expand the mind, to delight, to fill beings with a sense of wonder.
My mouth made a rude blatting noise. A sense of wonder? I laughed. What good is that? We're all about killing each other. You ever met a species that wasn't? She shook her head sadly.
Not many, she admitted.
I bet not. Either you kick the other guy's ass or he kicks yours. Cooperation is possible, mind you, but only as long as you've got a mutual enemy to struggle against. Look at the Galactics. They had it all, so what did they do? Florimel looked at me curiously. She had no answers. In some ways, her race was made up of innocents. They were smart, but they weren't very realistic. They got into a war for supremacy, that's what, I told her. They all wanted to be king of the hill. Imagine ruling an entire galaxy and blowing it all for petty spite.
You think such things are intrinsic with intellectual beings?
I guess, I said, messing with an actuator. I'm not much of a philosopher, but I do understand the basic nature of thinking beings. Look at it this way. If you're competitive and mean, you rise to the top. If you aren't, you serve those who are. Or maybe you're killed off. Who could possibly become the masters of the cosmos other than the biggest, meanest bunch of badasses among the stars?
Florimel looked at me thoughtfully.
In that case, she said, you humans might someday inherit everything.
Nah, we're mean, but I've seen worse. The stars are chock full of interstellar assholes. We stopped talking philosophy then and got to work. She demonstrated the gateway, but it didn't operate.
It takes a vast amount of power, she said. We'll have to connect couplings under the dome itself. You damaged one of our generators last time you were here, you know.
Yeah, sorry about that.
If we weaken our shielding, you might take down our dome entirely. Or you might have been sent here by the Nerbs to cripple us.
I met her eyes. She had a new look there, one of suspicion. I felt bad having brought so much discord to her intellectual race. I wasn't sure if I was doing them a favor by explaining the universe in realistic terms or performing an ethical crime. Look, I said, putting my hands on her shoulders and giving her a tiny squeeze. We're not here to kill you. Not now. We have to kill the Nerbs, or we all die. That's how true allies are born, in fear of a greater predator nearby. She didn't look at my eyes, but instead at my hands.
Are you attacking me?
She asked, curiously.
Ah, I said, dropping my hands away.
Sorry, sometimes humans touch one another in order to make a point.
I found it distracting. I barely heard what you said.
I was trying to explain that allies...
Yes,
she said.
I got your message. Our people only touch when it's time to mate. Were you attempting to mate with me?
No. As I said, my face turned red, but she didn't seem to notice. She was still staring at my hands.
That was a very unusual, sudden, forceful contact,
she said.
I've never been approached that way.
My ears thought they heard a little something in her voice. Did you like it? I asked. Florimel thought about that, and at last she nodded.
Yes,
she said. That was it for me. We'd been working in this dark tomb for hours. I was tired and thirsty, and it didn't matter. She was beautiful, and this version of James McGill was a virgin. I just had to break him in, and I did so with relish. She seemed to like it, too, but I think she was used to a much more stately process. When I make love, a woman knows what happened, if you know what I mean. It took a while, but Florimel finally melted and got into it. An excellent time was had by all, and it wasn't until later that I realized I was still thirsty. Along about halfway through the lovemaking, I figured out Florimel had to be human. I mean, there are only so many ways to shape feminine body parts, but hers were just too similar to what I was used to for the whole thing to be some kind of evolutionary coincidence. Quietly questioning her about it, she explained that her people were descendants of neurotypical humans. Their ancestors had been stolen from Dust World, just as the littermates, trackers, and other types had been. Bred for brains, they'd come out looking a little different from the human norm, but no more so than one race varied from another back on Earth. Somehow I felt better knowing I'd just made love to a real live woman. Leaving her curled up on a cot we'd found in the chamber, I went searching for a drink. Chapter 48. Unfortunately, it seemed like the rogues had never discovered alcohol, or at least they didn't bother to drink it for fun. When I'd finally given up asking nerds about it, I headed back through the maze of equipment toward the love nest I'd set up with Florimel, but I never made it back there.
"McGill,"
hissed a voice from the dark. I whirled and drew my pistol. I couldn't see who was talking, but I knew a snake when I heard one. "Claver?"
"You fuck up," he told me. "How'd you get these lab monkeys to catch me? They're smart, but not like that."
While I responded, I picked my way through the mounded equipment and junk that was piled high in the room. I circled a motionless drone, and I thought I had him, but he wasn't behind it. "I told them what you'd come to steal next," I said. "They set the trap."
"Hmm," he said. "A simple appraisal of trading value. That's what it was. Am I that transparent, even to a man of your low intellect?"
"You're like a bay window drinking in a sunny morning," I told him, "as clear as glass. How did you get away from those rogue guards, anyhow?"
He made a snorting sound. "That was easy. They turned off their stasis field and tried to arrest me. Like most tech geniuses, they're gullible fools when it comes to practical matters. But I can't get off this planet."
"Why not?"
"Their stasis device drained the charge in my suit, and I can't jump. I can't even find a charging port that will fit."
I smiled. I'd taken the precaution of telling Florimel exactly what kind of fitting we used. I'd had them remove that connection point from every portal down here.
"Well, that's a damned shame," I said. "What can I do for you?"
"It's what I can do for you," he said. "I can make you rich, McGill. I can get you off this rock in order to spend it, too. You'll live on, even if every other human in the galaxy perishes."
"Sounds pretty good," I said in an upbeat tone.
That's when he finally revealed himself. He stepped out into the open and gave me a big smile.
"I'm actually glad to see you, boy," he said. "These people give me the creeps. They're too honest and thoughtful. It's weird."
I took a step toward him, lowering my weapon. We were both smiling like it was our wedding day.
"Show me a matching power coupling," Claver said, "and I'll give you coordinates to safely port out of here."
"Throw in a suit and you've got a deal," I told him.
I stepped forward and he reached out a hand to shake mine. Now, I'm no genius, but my mama didn't raise no fool either. Claver's suit was Earth-made, and I'd traveled using similar suits a number of times. The charging meter on his chest was clear and easy to read. It had a full charge with a green LED glimmering on the front panel. Accordingly, my hand moved forward to meet his, but it never got there. Instead, I grabbed his wrist and pulled him toward me. My other hand came up balled into a fist, and I punched his lights out. It wasn't the first time I'd abused one version of Claver or another, and it probably wouldn't be the last. He fell, rolled over, and I checked to make sure he couldn't reach the teleport button. I stripped off the suit, and he groaned awake on the deck during the process.
"What was that for, you ape?" he demanded. "You just wanted to rob me, didn't you? I can't believe I fell for it."
"You got greedy, Claver," I told him. "You should have been satisfied with stealing tech and escaped when you could have."
"What are you talking about?"
"I'm talking about you planning to port me to the NARB ship. What kind of reward are they offering for my capture?"
He looked at me with his right eye only. His left was swollen shut.
"More than your damned carcass is worth, that's for sure."
"Dead or alive?" I asked. "If you'd ported out the moment we shook hands, I'd have melted in flight."
He shook his head.
"Nah, probably not. It's only a few million kilometers up to their ship. You'd be singed outside the suit, but you'd live."
I smiled at him again, because he just provided me with the critical information I was looking for. The suit was set to go to the NARB's ship next. Still smiling at him, I buttoned up his suit onto my own larger frame. It automatically stretched and cinched, reshaping itself.
"Oh, shit," he said, seeing my smile and catching on. "Just kill me now, McGill. I've been bested by a subhuman,
Clearly I'm a bad grow. I should be recycled feet first. Sorry, no time for that, I told him. I've got too much work to do, and I think the locals might want to deal with you in their own way.
I contacted Florimel and her people. They soon came and arrested Claver. With a teleport suit at the ready and a gateway system being set up for my use, I was feeling pretty good. The first thing I did was test it. I popped up to the NARB ship and had a look around. That was a ballsy move, even for me. I could have arrived in the midst of a firing squad, but I didn't. I was in a quiet hold with dim-lit ceilings far above. There were items there I recognized. Claver had been squirreling away his stolen loot aboard the NARB ship. I had to marvel at that. He was gutsy. I didn't know if the NARBs were in on that part of the deal or not, but either way, Claver was a criminal mastermind. Heading back to my starting point was easy enough. Earth suits had a back button that took you to the last place you'd come from. Employing that, I found myself standing near a surprised-looking Florimel a moment later. "Excuse me, miss," I said. "You should really mark the spot where a man teleports out. If you stand right there, you might merge up when he comes back." Alarmed, she did chalk the spot, and they all stayed well clear of it. I had Florimel's nerds help me get the exact coordinates of the NARB ship from the suit's memory. That wouldn't last long, of course. The computer on the suit was smart enough to match for drift, but if the ship got underway, I'd be left popping out into the void to no purpose. Next, I had them calculate the position of Nostrum relative to where we were now. This wasn't hard, as they were constantly monitoring every vessel in the star system. Taking one half of the paired gateways in my hands, we recharged the suit, and I popped out again to the Nostrum. This time, I didn't land perfectly. I came out about 3 meters above the deck, and I crashed down pretty hard due to artificial gravity effects. Fortunately, the gateway wasn't damaged. I lugged the device into a quiet hold and plugged it in. The plug was of Universal Galactic design, smart and easy to find. I turned the gateway on, activated it, and Florimel stepped out of a shimmering pink-white haze in the air between two poles. "So fast," I said, impressed. "The unit synced right up and found its mate instantly." She smiled.
"This is an improved model," she said. "It can't handle heavy equipment like the ones the cephalopods use to invade your world, but it can transfer one person at a time, reliably, over short distances."
Short distances? She was talking about millions of kilometers of open space. I knew the teleport suits could do better, crossing light years without a landing spot predetermined at the other end. Still, this tech was very impressive.
Florimel did something odd then. She reached up with both her hands, put them on my shoulders, and squeezed me lightly.
I said, "Are you trying to start something?"
"Maybe later," she admitted. "Right now, we should probably talk to your commanders."
Reluctantly, I led her out of the hold and up to the gold deck. Deitch, Graves, and a few other Primus-level officers looked at me and Florimel with great suspicion. I couldn't blame them for that. After all, my companion had helped arrange the deaths of thousands of legionnaires in the Arcturus system already.
"Sirs," I said, "meet Florimel. She's a principal investigator in the system, a boss lady scientist, you might say."
They still looked like they smelled something foul. I decided to press on without commenting about it.
"Florimel has decided to help us," I said.
"She..." "Oh, she has she?"
Tribune Deitch said, swaggering forward with her hands on her broad hips.
"Investigator, you're under arrest. All your people are to report via radio so they may be picked up for immediate processing."
Florimel looked at me in surprise.
"Who is this person?" she asked. "I thought you were in charge of this ship."
No, I admitted. "I'm an officer, but these people are my superiors. Let me explain."
Graves made a rude sound and chuckled.
"No need, Centurion.
Your antics are well known and expected. You gained her trust, told her a pack of lies, and lured her up here. She's your caller, don't worry. No one else will try to claim this capture.
Deitch glanced at him in annoyance. Then she turned back to me.
What about the rest of them?
She asked.
We saw you set up a gateway in our hold. Graves said we shouldn't interfere, but I'm anxious for results. Get the rest of the rebels to march through and into our hold.
I said. I